So our help is in the name of the Lord.
Who made heaven and earth.
So good morning on this cold, dreary, rainy day. Anyway, we're thankful for the further precipitation, and I'm sure the mountains are adding to that already sufficient snowpack. So we're grateful for that. Today, I will speak a little in preparation for our renewal form this coming Wednesday. As you received in your mailboxes, the agenda, we have a general, well, really the superiors, the Union of Superiors General, are asking the religious orders for their contributions in preparation for, I believe, the final session now of the Synod being held in Rome this coming October. And so there will be a response from our order, and so we all submit this this paper, not a house report, but it's a paper from each community, which the Central Commission will review, and somehow put together 150 reports into one synthesis, which then whoever, the Abbot General, I suppose, or someone, will be presenting at the Synod itself, reflecting on how Cistercians of the Strict Observance live co-responsibility and all that that means, and how they process in their tradition. So that's what I share today about. Some thoughts on the meaning of the word responsibility and co-responsibility, and how St. Benedict enshrines that within the rule, as well as how we express that as Cistercians of the Strict Observance in our current constitutions. The word itself, responsibility, at least in English, but likewise in Latin, is a highly nuanced word. Just going through Merriam-Webster's dictionary, it means moral, legal, or mental accountability. It can also mean reliability, trustworthiness, or ultimately to have a responsibility for something in the sense of one who shoulders or carries a burden. In Latin, the word is respondere, so it's second case, one of those, not too many verbs are in the second case, but respondere. And as, of course, we immediately hear that word, respondere, the word responds, which we also get because it does mean to answer or to reply. But it also can mean to advise in the sense of, in a very particular sense, of the advice of someone like a lawyer, a priest, which can mean any religious tradition, you know, someone who's identified as what's called a priest, or an oracle, you know, the Oracle of Delphi, giving their advice, as it were, when consulted. Can also mean to appear in law court, or it can mean to promise in return for something, in other words, a pledge. And in one sense, we can see our own tradition of the vow in this word, because we promise this or that to God. We promise our three monastic vows to God, and there is a pledge on God's part, or goes into even the whole concept of covenant beginning in the Old Testament. Two parties, they make a pledge to one another. You do this and I do that, etc. It can also mean in Latin to correspond in the sense of conformity or agreement. or to match. And then when you add the word or the prefix co-responsibility, it just comes from the Latin preposition cum, which means with someone or with something, accompaniment. And I found it interesting. I wasn't aware that cum, the Latin cum, comes from the Greek koinos, which means, of course, common. So when you're a co-person, you have something in common with the person you're in co with, as it were. But we're going to take that now for a moment and put it right here. And we're going to look at the word subsidiarity. This is contained in our New Clairvaux Book of Traditions. It's a preface to chapter 3 of our Book of Traditions, which follows the chapters of the Rule of St. Benedict, so the summoning the brothers for council. So subsidiarity, and this comes from the Book of Traditions. And again, the word subsidiarity, it comes from the Latin sidere, which actually means to sit, oddly enough. And then sub means under. So to sit under. So get that image in your mind, sitting under someone or something. And in the Latin military, the subsidium were the reserve troops. They were the troops under the main military troops that, when needed, would come out and serve under the main army of the Roman military. So subsidiarity, you're going to be sitting under someone. And in the Book of Traditions, we define this as the following, that the functions of management, problem solving, decisions belong to the appropriate level of management if they can and actually are performed effectively, rather than belonging to a higher level of management. This does not imply a lower level of management in the sense that it is exempt from a higher level of management. And our definition adds that monastic values, particularly obedience, call for the communicating with higher superiors for effective performance and integration of one's duties within the community's temporal and spiritual needs. Higher superiors have the right to information and the duty to become involved when responsibilities are not being accomplished correctly. And finally, this definition of subsidiarity in our Book of Traditions adds or concludes, the principle of subsidiarity requires discernment lest a monk act on his own personal opinion rather than from the common will expressed through the abbot and that established by the community. So in actual fact, subsidiarity is something very much a part of not only the rule, but also therefore of our constitutions. So just within our own tradition, within the house, you do have the abbot, and you have in our house, department heads and their responsibilities. And then you take another step up, if you want to put it that way, and then you have the father immediate, who is in accompanies and involved with the abbot in the community of a daughter house or of affiliation. You know, and then finally, you know, you go further, and there's the role of the Abbot General, his council, or Central Commission, I suppose, would be part of that. You know, but at each level, we address the situation as best we can, and hopefully we can address it, and only then do we go to a higher level. Okay, so let's look at the rule of Benedict. First of all, at least as much as the research I could find, the word responsibility is never used in the rule, or at least it's not translated that way into English. However, having what I just said, under chapter 3, summoning the brothers for counsel, you know, the abbot hears the advice of the brothers. So that's respondere, to advise or respond. Under chapter 32, the tools and goods of the monastery, St. Benedict says, the goods of the monastery are entrusted to brothers whom the abbot has confidence. The brothers are to care for these goods, not treat them carelessly. So there's reliability or trustworthiness, to have a responsibility for something. In this case, the goods of the monastery, you know. Chapter 46, under faults committed, St. Benedict says, if a brother breaks or loses something or fails in any other way, he must of his own accord admit this before the community. In other words, accountability. You know, and that, of course, that gave rise to the chapter of faults. But we still practice that today. Unfortunately, sometimes, you know, we find something broken and no one claims that they broke it. But someone had to have broken it, you know, or lost something. And then in chapter 50, where St. Benedict has, it's entitled, the brothers working at a distance or traveling, they are to perform the work of God as best they can, not neglecting their measure of service. Okay, so not neglecting the service that they have pledged, in this sense of the work of God. And finally, under chapter 71, mutual obedience, St. Benedict has the brothers obey one another. While there is a hierarchy, nevertheless, there is mutual obedience, as the title suggests, clearly a sense of we're responsible to one another, and in one sense for one another. That can get kind of hairy when you've got some pretty serious problems in the community. You know, and we know the stories, tragically enough, sometimes of substance abuse, and or someone's, say, drinking, and we all know the person's drinking, but no one wants to do anything. But mutual obedience. In the constitutions, the word responsibility is used. It's used three times. I was going through the English edition of it and found the word three times. But at any rate, we'll just go down through these. In Constitution 14, unity and pluriformity of the community, each brother is to contribute to the upbuilding of fraternal relations, especially by sharing with others the spiritual gifts he has received. And that sharing with others is primarily there in the house with the brothers. not with all the outsiders. Although if someone's assigned to that role in the community, then it's a different thing. But ultimately, we do share with others, just as this little note, this card that went up yesterday from the retreatant, and just by who we are and how we're living, we are sharing with our visitors the spiritual gifts that we have received and practice. Constitution 15, reconciliation with God and with the brothers. The preservation of unity among the brothers depends on a sincere and mutual effort towards reconciliation. Clearly a sense of accountability and responsibility to one another, on living in peace with one another, learning to forgive one another, and all that that entails. In Constitution 16, active participation of the brothers, it says the right and duty for all to participate fully in the common life. So you have a right to participate, say, in Sunday morning chapter, but you also have a duty to be here, etc. You know, I mean, that's just one little example. And furthermore, Constitution 16 states the brothers are called to mutual care, mutual cooperation, and mutual obedience. There's the co accompaniment. You know, we're involved together to care for one another, cooperate, and obey one another. All are to be concerned for the spiritual state of the community. You know, so it's not just the abbot, or it's not just the department head, or it's not just the novice director, the cellar, or whoever. We're all concerned for the spiritual state of the community, so we're all accompanying one another. Constitution 20, mindfulness of God. All should take care that the monastic environment is favorable to silence and quiet. So again, we're all responsible for a quiet and silent environment. Constitution 29, separation from the world, and this is where responsibility is used. The application of these principles of separation, referring to the enclosure and the types of communication. You know, there they have the newspapers and the television or radio kind of thing. But the application of separation is the responsibility, not only of the abbot, as the Constitution says, but of all the brothers. And Constitution 35, brothers in charge of offices. The abbot selects suitable assistants for the various offices of the monastery, and the brothers chosen are to fulfill their duties cheerfully and worthily, keeping the commandments of God and the instructions of the abbot. So clearly, again, this co-responsibility. And finally, Constitution 45, Section 3, the process of formation. And this is, again, where the word responsibility is used. The role of the community in the process of formation is to help each brother to assimilate the essential elements of the Cistercian way of life. And those in formation, conscious of their responsibility, should actively collaborate with their formators. So at any rate, hopefully this will give you some further thoughts to ponder as we prepare for Wednesday morning's gathering and sharing on our own whole tradition within our Benedictine family, but within our own tradition of the Cistercians, of the strict observance, as well as in our own approach as monks of Vina, how we exercise this co-responsibility. And we leave the rest to the Holy Spirit and see what develops and what might end up there at the tables and the round table discussions in Rome in October. Are there any other announcements?